Okay, just a couple of preliminary things. The structure of talks over the autumn are going to be that there's going to be two drives, one which is essentially devotional, the other which is more strategic. I'm going to be spending a chunk of my time deconstructing, actually having a look at the stuff we did in the spring on vision. And I'm going to go through that in some detail. I hope that you'll be as excited about it as I am as we go through. And the other thing we're going to do is to do a series of sessions on people who changed. Now, we're getting into that as we talk a bit about baptism, and I may, just depend on whether I finish this morning, do the first talk on baptism this week. We will talk again on baptism. Marion's going to talk on that early in October. And as you know, we've scheduled baptisms for the 16th of October. And that's going to be a great time. It's always a party time. Now, that was one thing I wanted to say. The second thing is this. I will try and blog some of this stuff as I go through, because it's a way of putting footnotes and extra things in. To say in connection with that, we're going to do a chunk of work on the way in which we use social media over the next little while, so that we can make sure that if you're a Facebook kind of person, you know that something's changed on the website and vice versa. At the end of the day, if you don't like connecting with people, we can't help. We make the assumption that you're integrated enough with what's going on to look at the calendar. If you're not, we're not going to change you. Hey, that's your life. But what we want to do for people who want to connect, we want to give them as much help as possible. Just a couple more things which didn't want to say with children around in the main auditorium about what happened over in Pinehurst. Different people respond in different ways. If our grandson Toby had been there, he wouldn't have been able to get to sleep because of the fire appliances. That would have been, his four, and heavily into the fire brigade, and would have been very much into that. It was just as Emma was going to bed, who's one of our granddaughters, and she was quite freaked out by it. One of the strange things the following day is that Simon had to break into the house to remove a couple of the dogs that had died, because there's nobody that will do that. And then you have to pay £70 for the privilege of having them disposed of afterwards as well. The reason there were six police cars there is because things started kicking off in the area. And it's a thing which is very difficult to understand, although Simon seems to be able to understand it, that one of the lads who lived in the house next door was actually attacking the fireman, just simply because he was in such a state, didn't know what to do. Now, you'll appreciate that you can't retell these stories without people putting a very unpleasant cast on them. But, hey, this is real, and this is real people. Now, tonight, if you read the calendar, and as I say, if you don't, that's your life, some of us are going to get together to pray. Our Wednesday Kingdom Come prayer is a sort of boot camp, then we're really doing the stuff. At least we hope to be concentrating on prayer on Sundays when we pray. And we'll actually be reviewing that a bit more, because there's been some prophetic word coming into this about the Pinehurst situation as well. So all those bits will kind of fit together. Now, I'm going to do something which is a bit of a cheat. I'm going to read a piece from the Bible which I would like to refer to later on. But in the time that I've had to prepare this week, I haven't really managed to let the Bible text prepare me. You know? You don't prepare the Bible. The Bible prepares you. Yeah? And I really haven't got there, but I still feel as though there's a connection between this passage and what I want to talk about this morning. So I'm going to read a couple of little bits from it, probably most of it, and you can refer to it later on. It's the very last chapter in the very last of the Gospels, of John. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana, the sons of Zebedee, two other disciples were together. "I'm going to go out to fish," Simon Peter told them. They went, "We'll go with you." So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood by the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. He said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some." When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It's the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off. Right, so here's a guy who, I love this bit of the story, there's a guy who's just in his shorts, right, because he's fishing. He realizes it's the Lord, he puts his clothes on and leaps into the water. Okay, and swims. Now, I'm quite sure it's not that Jesus hadn't seen him in his shorts before, but what it meant that I think a good translation would be to say that Simon Peter was in the right state, and wrapped his outer garment with it round him, for he'd taken it off, jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, thinking that's Simon, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you've just caught." Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of fish, 153, but even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Right? When they finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." I read something a couple of weeks ago, can't remember where, but it was putting forward a different idea. And bear in mind, it was Simon who had chosen to go fishing that day. And we always assume that when Jesus said, "Simon, do you love me more than these?" he was referring to the disciples. And it's quite possible Jesus was pointing at the fish. "Are you more interested in what I'm doing than in business?" Yeah? Interesting angle, isn't it? Could be. No reason why not from the text. Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to me, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself where you wanted. But when you're old, you'll stretch out your hands, somebody else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." And interestingly, now, you would have thought that was just a normal thing. But John actually says there, Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at supper and had said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" By the way, this phrase, "the disciple who Jesus loved," only occurs in the book of John, and it's a way that John has of referring to himself. It seems a bit of a strange construction to us because it's almost as though he draws attention to himself. But presumably he wasn't trying to do that when he wrote the thing. So, when Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive till I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." Okay, now, I would like to refer to that. I've got a couple of other Bible references that I want to pick up as I go along. I may do, I may not do so. But all I can do is to say, well, the Lord will add his meaning to the word. The Lord will interpret it as we go along. So, Wednesday night, we were saying, Carol was saying, Wendy, Carol and I were at the commissioning by the Bishop of Swindon for Simon, which involved all sorts of things, but it involved laying on of hands, involved him being given a license to preach throughout the Diocese of Bristol, and various things there. But what was brilliant was to see, this seems to me to be how church planting could be, because it's not the case that you gather a congregation, people who are like-minded, and you do it, but you plant people into the area to actually build church and live church. And so they're diverting money. You know how hard up the Anglican Church is? They haven't got money for enough clergymen. So what they're doing, they're taking the money that they don't have enough of, and they're planting it into the geography. And then he was the archdeacon and the bishop between them were telling all the clergy in the area and all the churches that it was their responsibility to back this and to do it. And given the fact that the archdeacon is a well-known evangelical, he retires in 9 weeks' time, Alan Hawker, but he's a real toughie. By liberals in the diocese, he's known as an iron fist in a mailed glove, is quite insistent about some of these things. But one of the things he did was he preached about vision. And this is where I come into what I want to talk. He was saying, he talked about the fact that faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And he was giving a warning to the churches to say, it is inevitable that you will have a picture in your mind of what will happen, but of one thing you can be certain, it will not happen that way. Okay? So insofar as we have vision, we know we are going to be wrong. Okay? That's what it's about. But on the other hand, it talks in the Bible, particularly in the Book of Common Sense Ideas, Proverbs, it talks about the fact that without vision, people live carelessly. Without vision, people perish. And it says that hope deferred makes the heart sick. So because of the way we are, we need some of this stuff as well. But we're always aware of the fact that we don't know where we're going. Vision is not what is going to happen, it is what we would like to see. Just imagine Abraham when he set out. He'd got a mission, we've got a mission. Dayspring is all about living. And Abraham had a mission. He was looking for a city whose builder and maker was God. So, right, you phone a cab. Cab arrives, says, where do you want to go? Say, don't worry about that, start driving. Keep driving. 80 years later, keep on driving. And the interesting thing is, as far as we know, Abraham didn't do cities. He was a tent dweller all of his life. It took longer than one generation for that to come to pass. So what you have to do is you have to hold vision, but hold it lightly. So we don't want to get into a business sort of thing where, you know, sort of we're trying to make ourselves accountable for delivering exactly what we've said. Because what will happen is that we will pull back vision to what we know we can achieve. And you know that when we talk in terms of vision, we know that we have no way of achieving it. And actually Alan went on to say how after 18 months in his first parish, he and his wife were feeling pretty desperate because they had 100 people in their church. But 98 of those people came because the church had a bowling club and they could only play bowls on the church's green if they came along. There were only 2 people with a lively faith in Christ. But then after 18 months during Lent, 2 or 3 people suddenly came to faith in Jesus. And he was saying over the next 6 years, 350 people found faith up in Wigan. And it wasn't something that he was able to predict. And both he and his wife stood there and watched what God was doing independently of them. And I find that hugely encouraging, because if you suggest something that would grow the number of people who are following Jesus in this area, we would try it. And I think to some extent we would try it, because we know whether it works or not, it's our job to, by all means, win some. But what we're looking for is for God to do it in the cracks, in the bits between our plans. And so, just a couple of things about vision. Quite often, people wonder about why it's necessary to have a vision and what happens to your personal vision and so on. And I think there are lots of places where you can have things that you've got a vision for. The problem is, of course, if you get the more than one vision, you know the word, you end up with two visions, division. You get two visions, you get division. That is inevitably what happens. So there has to be one overarching thing. And if you wanted a Bible word that would be better, it would be calling. And our calling's not the same. It's not the same for every group of people. It's not the same for every church. You remember, you got Peter, who was called to the Jews. Paul, who was called to the Gentiles. We think, was it Thomas, who was called to India? And obviously somebody had been ministering in Africa as well. Different people had different foci, different calls in their lives. So, but what we do say is there are loads and loads of things that can fit within that one vision. What we say, one vision, many vehicles, right? And with, but the vehicles connect with the vision. And if this is all too technical and not really interested, fine. We're only worried if we get division. So if this works for you, that's fine. It only works in the context of shared values. So if we say, if you don't mess with the values, we won't mess with the vehicle. And so whatever the vehicle is, that's fine. If it's expressing the kind of values. Now I'm going to pop back to values. But just remember in passing that almost always the people who move on from one church, people move on from one church to another because of values. I was sitting, just as I was finishing off my notes this morning, and thinking, I can only think of about three occasions when people have left Dayspring that it's not been about a values issue. Basically, people leave because they want different things, and there are different things that make them excited. And you know, there are sometimes when you talk to people, and I can remember talking to a minister friend about this, and I said, the problem is that the things which make you ever so excited make me go, duh. And the things which make me excited, you look at me as though you can't understand why I want to do them. And that's really where values are. You know, there are people who have got values about furniture in their houses. They love to have really exquisite furniture. I'd rather put money into holidays. You know, different people, different things. There's some people who are really heavily into tidy. There's some people who are really heavy into messy. And we prefer to find a way in the middle, you know, sort of. I'm happy with my messes, but not with Wendy's, and vice versa in our house. If we each had a brief to tidy up one another's stuff, we'd do probably quite a good job, really. So, values there. Now, let me just, for those of you who don't know, this stuff is all on the web, and I think it's in the public area anyway, but of course if you want to be part of Dayspring, you can get the access. But the sort of key elements in our vision statement are this, that our vision includes, where's it gone? Oh, here it is. Reading the wrong page here. I told you it was a bit vague and a bit here and there. But we've said this, and it makes me cringe when I say this bit. We see Dayspring becoming a network. That's not a problem. But then we've got these words in that we keep getting drawn back to, of 1,000 people seeking to follow Jesus more closely in more areas of our lives. Joined together in outward-looking relationships and expressions of church, where our neighbours matter most, working with others in the power of the Spirit to transform community in Wiltshire and beyond. Now, take me between now and Christmas, when I don't get bored and speak on something else, to actually deconstruct that, to work through that. But my goal in the end is that we can all talk vision to one another. And I would think it would be great if our conversation has helped us shape the way we express this, so that it gets more clear. But what I want to do this morning is just focus on this bit about a network. Now, as you know, if you've been around for a while, we used to say a church of 1,000 people. So why have we changed it? We do want to be a church, but there is a problem with using the word church. I was with a group of ministers, Marion and Andy were there as well, during the week, and I got into a discussion with one of the guys beforehand, and he said to me, by the way, he said, how big's your church? I said, what do you mean, how big's our church? He said, well, how many people do you have on a Sunday morning? I said, I'm not answering that because I thought you wanted to know how big our church was. And gradually, he's quite easy to wind up, but he got more and more and more wound up as we went along. And because I've decided over the summer in my thinking and reading that I am going to steadfastly, wherever I go, because I believe that it is utterly wrong and pretty fleshly to get into the numbers thing in terms of just thinking about the Sunday morning meeting. It contradicts our values, you see, in that, to think in that sort of way. I said to him, what do you want to know? Do you want to know how many people we're serving? Because over the course of a year, we think that's somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 people. Do you want to know how many people we're discipling? Because sometimes I think it's about 7. Yeah? Or do you want to know how many people we're releasing? Okay? What are those are other ways of measuring what's in church. See how that ties back to values? You see, we do think that Sunday mornings matter, but it's not the defining factor, which is why we talk about a network. And I want to go into this a bit in some details. By the way, you know, it talks in Matthew 13 about the kingdom of heaven being like a net, because it gathers things in. You know, a network does that. And probably much more importantly, it talks about the connectedness of the body. I ought to read this one for you just so that I maintain my evangelical credentials of reading enough of the bits of the Bible explicitly. Then we will no longer be influenced, tossed back and forth by waves and blown here and there by teaching and by the cunning and craftiness of people in their deceitful scheming. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into him who is the head. From him the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. This talks about connections, talks about networks, talks about structures. We're heavily into structures. I can see all of you are, right? Heavily into structures. Because if you didn't have any structure, they'd have to carry you around in a bucket, wouldn't they? What are your skeletons for? It's a structure. You need structures. Fortunately, we can't see it, right? We don't want to see structures, but they're there. And those structures facilitate networks, and networks express life. And if you're into systems, some of you will be thinking in those sort of terms. And if you're thinking about family life, you think about the networks there, the connections, who do you connect with? So, for instance, most of the stuff I hear about my sister and her kids, I will hear through my mum and dad. you know, that's the way the network works, and I'll see them, and there'll be a connectedness because of that. And then all that we know about Wendy's brother's kids will be through talking to him and to Christiane and his wife. So family networks as well, computer networks, road networks, networks all over the place. So just those sort of things in mind. But I want to just give you an example, and the example will sort of obliquely connect with Roy, who's becoming a friend of ours here, and it will connect with Tina, and it will connect with Philippa. And I just want to talk about connectedness in the context of church being on the town. Right, now some of you get involved in On the Town, most of you have been involved in On the Town at various times, but we've actually found that there's something that happens when we put our little trolley out in the street and start to talk to people. Not always do we get a chance to pray for people, but we've found that regularly we get stronger and stronger connections with individuals. And you must tell Brenda that I mentioned her in the media. Actually, I was going to quiz her this morning. I was going to interview her if she'd been here, so she had a bit of a lucky escape. But Tina's mum's one of those people who we connected with. And what's happened is that Philippa and Brenda have particularly connected, but that connection mostly happens at the kindness cart, at the very house of God, yeah? The house of God, the place where God comes and meets people. And so when they get together, I don't know whether we'll see her in a couple of Saturdays' time, but they start to talk and the story carries on from last time. And the story normally leads to people praying, right? Now, I don't know where Brenda would describe her faith, but certainly out of those connections, she was telling me stories last time of how she felt significant things were happening in her life and connections were going on there. And of course, out of that connection, lo and behold, Brenda, who's not part of Dayspring, and I don't know where she is as far as her faith is concerned, works out that her neighbour, who's a man of faith, and a man who's into the Bible anyway, one Roy over here, and connects with Roy. Right? So, and Roy's here this morning, and we've been seeing Linda, and we know that Roy's got a connection through children and grandchildren into church over in Burford, is it? Yes. Yeah, but out that way as well, and there's some live faith going on there, and you think, gosh, the only way to describe that's like a net, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah? And there's joints there, and things are flowing between them. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. Now that seems to me to be what that's about. And of course then Brenda is, well, you couldn't miss her in Cabaret Connection, could you? It's who's louder, her or her daughter? It's in the two of them. And there's a connection, there's spiritual conversations going on there. She's coming along next time?
Yeah.
As well, because she even comes when you're not able to be there, doesn't she?
I can't come this time. Yeah. She'll be there.
And there's another connection as well, because Brenda connects a bit with Carol and with Carol's parents, who are also not part of our Sunday morning, not part of our church, because they're not part of the Sunday morning congregation, yeah? See, you start doing that, and it starts connecting outwards. You could use other examples about the fact that Hugh, Michelle's husband, connects with some guys in the church over golf, yeah? And then, a little while ago, when we did Cabaret, we heard from Karen and Rolf, and during that event, somebody who knew Karen from way back, knew her story, came up and started talking about difficult things that were going on in her life. And then, of course, we got this multiple connection up into Pinehurst. Yeah, with the guys there. Which comes with the bus being involved there. And so Andy overlaps with that. And in other areas, Dave connects with Simon. And the kingdom of heaven is like a net. Yeah? Do you get it? Do you get there? You see, Sundays are good. They're important. They make a difference. We're up for that. But I don't think that we should be aiming at thinking that we want to define ourselves by having a congregation of 1,000 people. Now, some of us would like that. I'm sure Ralph would like that. It scared up out of him initially, no doubt. But the thought of actually having a group of people would mean there wouldn't be so many quiet points in the meeting, because there'd be all the... And I'd like that. But, you know, the thing I would like about that even more than preaching would actually be just sitting there and watching it all happen. But that's not really where it's at. That's all ego stuff, isn't it? It's great if you get people together, loads of people praising God. You think of what a shot in the arm it is for those of you who go to New Wine or Soul Survivor. But really, you can't live on that 365 days a year. If that helps you to, on the bad days, right, live as though Jesus is beside you, that's fine. But the trouble is, of course, what it does for lots of people is that they sort of try and live from one of those events to another. You know, I've got to get shot in the arm. And there's no prescription in the Bible for shots in the arm, not intended, called addiction. Yeah? That kind of thing. And addiction to big events is just as bad as any other addiction. So, how does it work? In practice, we've already mentioned OTT as a program. And you see, OTT is an expression of our values deep down. If OTT doesn't make sense to you, it's highly unlikely that Dayspring will make sense to you, because it expresses part of what we're passionate about, and we want to see people following Jesus out of that. Not so long ago, Philippa, who can be quite provoking when she tries, and you might think she can be provoking when she doesn't try as well, but she was on the town, and somebody came up to her and said, "Where's your church?" And because they were a churchgoer, she thought they were fair game. So she said, "Here." "Yeah? Where's your church?" "Here." Theologically accurate. Really brilliant. That's where it was. So, when you're picking up kids from school, "Where's your church?" "Here." "Would you like me to pray for you? Would you like to meet God? Just here." It's always possible. Wherever you are. That doesn't mean to say, you have to watch it, because if you don't, if you're not careful, and you get too far into that way of thinking, you end up with saying that if the church is everywhere, it's nowhere. And of course there are benefits in gathering, whatever the context of gathering is, whether it's for prayer, or whether it's in small groups, or whether it's in this kind of environment, which we define as being one... hang on, I need to breathe. As being one where which is designed for people who want to follow Jesus more closely in more areas of their lives. And we would always want to evaluate our gatherings in that sort of way. But within that context, then barn dances count too. Yeah? Barn dances good. Barn dances work. They make sense for us. Because they're ways of connecting. Then... we get on to projects. Pete Waterman said to us a little while back that we needed to think about changing the name and centre for spirituality. And I think that's good. I think we want to do that. It's a bit of a mouthful. Don't want to lose the spirituality idea, because it's absolutely imperative. It sounds nice and new agey. Because they're the kind of people we want to connect with. And if it puts Christians off because it sounds a bit spiritual, then that's fine, as long as it helps us connect with the people that we want to minister to, and it helps us to meet God, But I'm sure David can't remember doing this, because Dave is the person who carries the torch for Centre for Spirituality, just in the way that Andy carries the torch for Open Blue and the outreach that happens through there. But Dave, I think, was saying to me, he can't remember saying this, but it was obviously somewhere where he thought I was getting a bit out of line, because he said, we need to be careful that when we're thinking about the Centre for Spirituality, we don't suddenly start thinking of it as being a place to hold Sunday meetings. And then other things come along. And do you know, I've had two conversations in the past week with people who are looking at premises. And in both cases, they were saying, fantastic opportunity to reach the community. Right? We could reach the community by using it as conference centre. We can use it as to reach the community by having people being able to hire it for concerts and so on and so forth. And you get back in the end to say, yeah, but why? Have you actually listened to the community and found out what they need? And of course, no, the answer isn't that. We do not want to have to do setup on a Sunday, right? We want to have a place which is ours, and we can have things written on the wall and can make it look really nice. And we only want that for 2 hours a week. But we've got to justify it one way or another. So what we'll do is we'll add this on and that on and the other on. Now, when it comes to this outreach centre, and we'll be talking about that, we'll be going into some detail about that probably in 3 or 4 weeks' time when we talk about expressions of church, be using that as an example. We know that we want to be an environment for people to meet God, but it would be really silly if we allowed the tail to wag the dog. And we're thinking about something which was really designed just for us to use for a couple of hours a week. It's not where our thinking is. Okay, let's just go on to where it affects us personally. Connection has got to be at the heart of what we do. So, the fact of the matter is, the test of church, that's what comes sitting in the front row team, is the degree to which we have connections with one another. Now, I probably see Tina once a week, sometimes in between, during that course, during the course of that week. But I have connection to her through all sorts of other people. And sometimes she's surprised at how much I know. I'm sure there are things that she does that I don't know about what's going on, you know, in her exciting life. But there's enough of a connection for it to make sense. That's what makes church. Connections with one another. That which each joint supplies. The second thing to say is that disconnection is a really dangerous disease. Now, I don't want to make a big deal of this, but I do want to make a point. I had a conversation with somebody not so long ago, and I said, I can't imagine anything that would make me want to chuck you out of the church. Because they were asking me whether I wanted to kick them out of the church. There is one thing, and that's trying to break the net, causing division. And the way that works is this, that sometimes, because of the way we are, what we want to do is to have people connected to us. And the way we feel most connected to other people is we go around snipping the connections to others. Yeah? So they're just connected to us and not to other people. Now that's considered really, really bad in the New Testament. And it's probably the only reason why. I can only think of one occasion where I've done that specifically after a lot of thought, prayer, and said to people, well, look, really, you know, if you don't like us, if you're always slagging us off, then you really need to go somewhere else. And that's once in 15 years, so it doesn't happen that often. And those people, boy, I think they had issues which had got very little to do with us. The final thing is this, that if we get hold of this, I think we've answered the bit about how of 1,000 people. Because if it's all in the connections, if you're connected to some people, and I'm connected to some people, and of course this isn't just two-dimensional, it's multi-dimensional, is that I started to try and draw a diagram when I was praying about this a few days ago, and I couldn't get enough dimensions on my piece of paper to think about that, because you think about families and their teenagers being connected with one another and here and so on and so forth, and of course it overlaps onto other churches that we work with as well, and I think it's a blast, and I'm finding that as I start to get into this stuff I get more and more and more excited, because I begin to realise that it's that which every joint supplies. And so somehow, over the years, Tina has built up a level of credibility. Yeah? Just listen to this, don't try and shrug it off. Built up a level of credibility, which means that her mum has got enough confidence in you, in her spirituality. And I tell you what, if your mum, who isn't involved in the church, has got confidence in your spirituality, then there's obviously something going on. Which means that Tina's a good enough recommendation for Dayspring, or what we're doing, that her mum's willing to talk to Roy about it and take a risk on that. Because she doesn't obviously Brenda doesn't want Roy to come along to us and think, blimey, that woman must be nuts recommending that I go there. thank you for that. You see what I mean, don't you? It works, and it's through the individual connections that it makes. Not about a poster, is it? Or a TV slot? Or a big ad? Like Paul said, you're our recommendation. Great. And do you know, I think you're a brilliant recommendation as well. I really do. As I look around, I think fantastic. Maybe only a few of us. If you think of all the people that we get connected to. And I'm still not sure how you measure church. By the way, I did tell the guy how many people we've got in Dayspring on a Sunday morning, but then said, that don't really count. But he was really cross by the time we'd finished. I'm going to have to write a nice email to him during the week. I'm not apologising, that's for sure, but I need to actually make sure he understands where I was coming from. Let's pray for a minute. Father, give us the ability to think that we haven't got it all right, because we know that we are most wrong when we think we've got it right, because we're never going to get it right anyway, because we only see through a glass darkly. But Lord, help us to discern as much as you're giving us of what you want us to do just at the moment. And Father, we pray for all those connections, all the connections we don't know about, that are actually very real just at the moment. Father, we pray for everybody who from time to time connects with us through on the town. Lord, we ask that by your grace you will help us to identify those who in more areas of their lives want to follow Jesus more closely. And help us to get where you're taking us. Amen. 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 That's it, guys. Don't forget that special offering bucket. Yes. And please do stay for lunch, whatever your plans are. There's enough bacon sandwiches to go around, I'm sure.